Welcome to Ballot Battleground Nevada. I'm your host, Ben Marjat, a reporter at KRNV News 4 in Reno. I'm passionate about making politics in this critical battleground state more digestible to the average voter and pushing past the talking points to press politicians for answers. On this show, we take deep dives into the people, ideas, and debates shaping Silver State politics. How Nevadans have voted has changed quite a bit in recent years, with mail ballots, same-day registration, and other changes to our election laws. But how the winning candidates are selected has never really changed. In the primary, voters registered with a specific party vote, and whoever gets the most votes becomes that party's nominee. In the general election, everyone is able to vote, and whoever gets the most votes wins the seat. Pretty straightforward. But question three, which will be on the November ballot, would upend all of that, making drastic changes to that process, implementing so-called open primaries and ranked choice voting. It would be perhaps the biggest shift in Nevada's election laws in state history, and if supporters are correct, could end the two-party system as we know it today. Detractors say it threatens to make this already confusing process all the more confusing, and that's why it warrants a careful and close examination, and it's why we're so thrilled to start talking about question three so early in this process. Before we get into the pros and cons, and there will be plenty of time for that, we wanted to get a nonpartisan, unbiased look at question three and explain these reforms in detail. That's why I'm so excited to bring on two people from the Gwynn Center, Nevada's independent, data-driven, nonpartisan policy research center. As it turns out, they just released a lengthy report looking into what question three would do, what Nevadans know about ranked choice voting in open primaries, and whether they support these changes. So without further ado, let's dive in. All right, I'm joined now by two of the Gwynn Center's finest, Christine Callagher, the assistant director, and Mike Stewart, the research director at the Gwynn Center. Christine and Mike, thank you so much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure.
Happy
thank
to be
you.
Here. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. You know, obviously, was really trying to get Jill Tolles to come on the podcast.
I know.
But you guys will suffice.
All right, Jill, you're on notice.
I know.
I'm teasing you guys. I have a great relationship with Jill. And we'll get in here, her in here eventually. But full disclosure, too, Christine used to work here at News 4. So you're back in the building.
I'm back, baby.
How does it feel being back where you worked for 7-8 years, I think, right?
Honestly, as I'm reflecting on it in this real-time moment, it feels like a very full circle moment. You know, just as we were discussing before we started taping the podcast, you know, one of the things that so many of us in the TV news business have wanted to do for a long time is to provide other avenues and innovative avenues to provide context and perspective and relevance to the stories that matter. And it's really difficult to do that in 90 seconds. It's really difficult to do that in 20 seconds, in a 20-second soundbite. So the fact that you have the ability to do this now, to provide more depth, to provide more context for viewers and for your audience, it's a dream come true. It's almost like everything that, you know, we were trying to set in motion,
right,
you know, 6 years ago is coming to fruition, and it's amazing to see it.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been such a fun and fulfilling project, and I'm so appreciative to all the guests and listeners. We're only a couple months in, hope to do this for a lot longer because especially within a topic like what we're going to be talking about today,
yes,
you cannot fit that into 90 seconds. So before we get into ranked choice voting specifically, for folks who might not know, what is the Gwynn Center and what's its purpose? What do you guys do?
The Gwynn Center is Nevada's only statewide nonpartisan policy research center. And Michael will get into what that means here in a second in terms of what we mean by policy research. But our job is to conduct independent research on topics that range from the economy to education to healthcare to election policy, and to bring people a trusted information source that is free from political influence and is rooted in data. That's the whole reason we exist. Our main audience is the Nevada legislature and the governor, which we refer to typically as our 63 plus one. But our research, and this is intentional, our research is open sourced and it's open to the public, because at the end of the day, what we all know is that political and policy discourse in our state, and arguably far beyond our state, is more polarized than ever. And a lot of people are approaching issues with their own sets of facts. And from where they sit, they're correct. But the Gwynn Center exists to zoom out, to widen that lens, to bring everyone to the table around what the facts and the data bear out, to restart these policy conversations around the realities that we share as opposed to the things that divide us.
And that political polarization that you mentioned is one of the ills of our democracy that Question 3 seeks to solve. So it's a good segue into open primaries and ranked choice voting. I explained it a little bit in the intro, but as it stands right now, our closed primary system, if you're a registered Republican, you can only vote in the Republican primary in June.
Correct.
Same with Democrats. If you're a registered Democrat, you can only vote in the Democratic primaries. A third of the electorate, all these nonpartisan voters, are left out of that primary process altogether. They have no say in who shows up on the general election ballot. So, Mike, open primaries, let's start with that. Mm-hmm. How do those work? Because a lot of people might be hearing about this for the very first time.
Sure. So ballot question number three with regard to open primaries. It is kind of a wholesale change in the way we select and advance candidates to the general election. Currently, as you mentioned, our primaries are considered closed primaries. Only people who are within their political party can vote for members in their party. And so this question, if approved, would alter that partisan primary from a closed primary election system to a system whereby all candidates, no matter whether they're Democrat, Republican, Independent, or minor party, would be listed on the primary election ballot. And as many as five from that primary election ballot would then advance to the general election. And if there are five or fewer candidates, then they all would advance to the general election. So it's important to think about this as a process, not necessarily of determining nominees, but actually narrowing down the field to the general election.
Right. So there's, say, 30 candidates that apply to run for governor, and there's Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, you name it. They all appear on one lengthy ballot for every single voter in the state in the June primary, mm-hmm. right? Every single voter has the same ballot. They pick one person or multiple people in that June primary?
So in the primary election, they're choosing one person. But who is advanced is up to five candidates. So sometimes there will be fewer than five candidates who actually file for office for those to that races. And so all would advance. So, but the ranking part we'll get to, that's where you start selecting multiples. But in the primary election, a voter, if ballot question is approved, would be selecting one candidate, and the top five vote getters would advance.
Sometimes referred to as the final five, right? So
all
Correct. These candidates are on the ballot, and the final five, pretty straightforward, mm-hmm. five people that have the most votes advance to the general election. Are we summarizing that correctly? Anything else to add on the open primaries? I think that's a little bit easier of the two pieces of this to understand.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. Let's move into ranked choice voting then. So mm-hmm. the final five that advance out of the primary move on to the election, where, again, every single voter in the state, of course, is able to participate regardless of party affiliation. Right. They walk into the voting booth. They see these five final candidates on their ballot. What comes next?
And so if ballot question three is approved, it would, as you mentioned, propose changes to how the voting is, how the tabulation process occurs. In ranked choice voting, really the premise is just as it sounds. So at the polls, and as with the case with ballot question three, again, if proposed, is when you go to the polls, or if you use a mail ballot for that matter, you rank the selections on the general election ballot up to five in your order of preference. So when tabulation occurs, which, by the way, happens in a matter of seconds with our tabulation systems that are all electronic, it means that if your top choice does not actually win, that candidate gets eliminated, and then the votes are then reallocated to your next choice. So in general, just to sort of explain a little bit further, if the ballot question three is approved, it would look like this. So if the highest ranked candidate receives a majority of the votes of those five, 50 plus one, mm-hmm. that candidate is declared a winner. They have achieved that majority. But if no candidate receives the majority and there's two or fewer left, let's say not as many people filed for that office,
yeah.
The candidate that gets the most votes, so if there's just two, gets the most vote, they become elected to that office. Here's where it gets kind of a little more difficult to explain. But
sure.
In all other instances, the tabulation then would advance to what we'll just call it, I say, a round two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the candidate with the least amount of first choice votes is eliminated. And the votes cast for that eliminated candidate then are added to the votes totals of each ballot's second choice candidate. So, and if your first choice was not eliminated, your vote would still remain.
Right.
So put another way, if the candidate with the fewest votes is eliminated and the votes cast for that eliminated candidate can be added to the totals of each ballot's next highest ranked candidate. So, and then a new round will just keep happening until a majority is reached by one of those candidates.
Right. And that's kind of the goal of this proposed reform, essentially, where,
right.
or one of the goals is that the person that wins ultimately has a majority support of the electorate. Might not be their first choice, but
right.
their first, second, or maybe third choice.
Mm-hmm.
A majority of people voted for that person in some fashion, in most cases, in these types of elections. Whereas
Correct.
Right now, you could have someone win office mm-hmm. with 42-43% of the vote.
Right.
It's a plurality, but it's not the actual majority.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And as that tabulation reoccurs, it's reoccurring until a majority happens.
Yeah.
So, which is important. A voter can choose to just select one candidate. That's okay. But at that point, that tabulation ceases if that candidate doesn't stay in the first place position.
It benefits the voter to pick at least a couple of people. So that way,
correct.
You know that, you know, if your first choice is eliminated, your voice still counts in some fashion in this election because they just move on to the second choice. Are we summarizing? Do we feel like we've covered kind of ranked choice voting well
yeah,
enough? Because
I think so.
The actual, I mean, we rank things all the time in
right.
our daily lives. So I think the ranking part is relatively straightforward. My favorite candidate, one, my second favorite, two, and so on. But it's kind of the counting and how that winner is ultimately chosen mm-hmm. that gets a little funky. You guys set out to kind of study where Nevadans feel on this issue, how much knowledge they have or don't have about our current electoral system, as well as this proposed reform in question three with ranked choice voting and open primaries. When did you guys do this study? What did you guys want to learn? Who did you talk to? Just take me through this report that we have here on clarifying question three.
So our methodology was mostly survey-based. We had a wonderful graduate student from the University of California, Berkeley, Hannah Jackson, a former ASUN president, actually.
Yeah.
Right.
She's getting
yeah.
her master's degree in public policy at Berkeley. And so we brought her on to do this study, and she was so diligent and very and fantastic at this. It was a survey. We actually ended up serving 803 Nevadans using a Dynata platform. And we asked questions about the voters' current knowledge, their political engagement, key areas of interest as they relate to ballot question number three, as well as just kind of some free response, which really helped inform the report. And so there was a broad range of ages, levels of education, reported incomes, and we got at least one response from every county. And then 36% of the respondents actually identified as Latinx, which was really important because that is representative of the Nevada, of the state of Nevada as a whole.
Right.
And so what this survey did was really help what is now our report on basically an explainer of ballot question number three. And that really answers some major questions. They really are the what and the how.
Mm.
What is ballot question number three? And how do open primaries and ranked choice voting work?
And I think what's interesting about this report is that obviously we were looking to identify what knowledge gaps existed in regard to question three itself. But some of our initial questions in the survey revealed a high level of knowledge gaps with how Nevada's current election system works, which was really interesting to find as a baseline. So
that stuck out to me as well, where
right.
a lot of people actually identified us as having an open primary system in Nevada as it stands today, which
that's
is not the
right.
case.
That's right. So, and that was one of the report's key findings, is that respondents, when they were asked about which primary system is currently used in Nevada, only 35% correctly identified that Nevada uses a closed primary system, and 65% said Nevada holds an open primary. And age really seemed to play a factor here. So adults over the age of 45 identified Nevada's current primary system with 47% accuracy, whereas adults younger than 45 answered the question with 23% accuracy. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the general election system, respondents fared much better, which is good. So 71% correctly identified that Nevada elects its representatives using a simple majority as opposed to a ranked choice system. But again, educational attainment seemed to play a factor here, with 80% of college graduates correctly identifying Nevada's current simple majority system, and 64% of non-college grads gave the correct response. So there did seem to be a little bit of a divide there. The survey also showed, turning to question three, that Nevada voters have a limited knowledge when it comes to these election reforms. And I think that's really what we want to dig into. 45% of respondents said they knew nothing at all about open primaries.
Which, again, this was on the ballot in 2022.
Right, that's correct.
Millions of people in the state voted on this just 2 years ago.
That's correct. And so it is interesting that these numbers, you know, bear out the way that they do, with 41% saying they knew a little and only 14% saying they knew a lot. And for ranked choice voting, it's not all that dissimilar, with 58% saying they did not know anything about ranked choice voting, 31% saying they knew a little, and 11% saying they knew a lot. So at this point in the survey, after this baseline, we introduced the sample ballot language. So the language that everyone saw in their sample ballot in 2022, right? So even after reading the language of the ballot question, only about a fifth of the respondents said that the language of the explanation was clear and that they understood the changes to the voting rules. The largest shares of respondents said that they somewhat agreed that the language was clear and they understood the rules. So about 35% were in that cohort. But then the remaining respondents, around 50%, said that they were either neutral, so they didn't really feel one way or the other about the clarity of the language, or understanding of the reforms. They somewhat disagreed that it was clear, or strongly disagreed that it was clear and that they understood the language. So it's really all that to say, Nevada voters displayed knowledge gaps, not only about Nevada question three, ballot question three, but also about the election process that we use today.
And that means that you guys at the Gwynn Center, us at News 4, media outlets across the state, campaign officials, and everyone needs to do a better job as we go into this general election season of informing. So that's why I think starting this conversation here early in the process is really good. We hope this is a reference for people all election season long. Hey, right. I don't know what's on my ballot. I can go back to this episode that you know, came down in March to listen, because there are so many people that when they get their ballots are just learning about it for the very first time.
Right. And in fact, our survey did reveal too what Nevada voters, at least among our respondents, said they wanted to see in terms of further information or further education. They have a lot of the same questions that we do, you know, about how the process is going to work, whether or not open primaries or ranked choice voting would change voter participation rates, how these processes work in other states, et cetera. And they also indicated that there are certain mediums that they want to receive that education from, primarily online articles and blogs, and video tutorials. Those were the things that floated to the top in terms of ways that people want to receive that voter education. So it's really wonderful, honestly, to have that kind of response for Nevada voters to tell us how they want to be educated and how they want to receive information about these reforms in order to make the best decision for them at the ballot box.
One finding that stuck out to me, and maybe it was surprising to you guys, maybe not, was that it wasn't actually nonpartisan voters that supported question three in theory at the highest rate. It was actually Democratic voters, and then which 50% of which said that they supported question three. You would think that since this question is kind of aimed at bringing the nonpartisan voter into the mix in our process, that they would be the most supportive of this, and that wasn't exactly the case. What other findings, maybe it wasn't surprising to you, but if it was, and then what other findings stuck out to you guys as potential surprises from this study?
Well, I think what's interesting, again, to your point, you know, the partisan divides were interesting to see. You noted that, you know, Democrats were most in support of the change at 50%. 43% of nonpartisan voters were in support, and 38% of Republicans were in support of question three. But zooming out for a bit, it's interesting to note that Nevada is not the only state considering these electoral changes. So Idaho, Colorado, and Oregon are also considering changing their electoral systems to ranked choice voting. Colorado and Oregon, of course, trend toward being bluer states, and Idaho, a predominantly red state. And so it'll be interesting to see to what degree, if at all, partisanship plays a role in the outcomes of these election reforms and these ranked choice initiatives. We also know that current literature shows, and this is something that the report addresses as well, is that younger voters are more likely to support ranked choice voting as opposed to older voters. Yeah. And yet, political engagement among younger voters tends to trend lower. Yeah. So that will be an interesting dynamic to see and to monitor as we look at the outcomes of these voter initiatives.
You guys at the Gwynn Center are nonpartisan, so this might be a little out of your wheelhouse, but take me through just briefly, and there will be plenty of time where I'm going to bring on people from the campaigns, both for and against question three, but just briefly take me through the arguments for and against, if you could. Maybe one of you guys wants to take the for and the other against.
Yeah, and this is a really good preface, too, that the Gwynn Center is not taking any positions on this. We are non-advocacy, but we did include in the report what has been reported as common arguments for and against. And matter of fact, we lifted them from the ballot question, from the Secretary of State's ballot question booklet as well. Mm-hmm. So common arguments for passage, that current primary election process is controlled by, in part, insiders, and it excludes nonpartisan voters, which now are about a third of our electorate. I think it's actually up to 40% now.
Wow.
Another common argument for passage is that ballot question three puts the power of elections with the voters and not political parties. Another pro argument is all voters have the choice in open primaries. Ranked choice voting gives voters more choice. Ranked choice voting prioritizes candidates so the winner is the most reflective of the will of the voters. Another common argument that we've seen is more access to the primary maximizes that one person, one vote principle. And then finally, another common argument for is that the tabulation there's no really greater delay in ballot counting because of our mechanical voting systems that we have already in place. On the flip side, arguments against. Question three, a common arguments against, some would say proposes kind of a jungle primary, lots of people in that primary election, which could be, to some voters, confusing and perhaps complicated. And the opponents would argue that that really does nothing to address partisanship. Opponents would also say that political parties would actually be perhaps shut out of the process. Opponents also argue that question number three would perhaps fundamentally damage traditional elections conduct. They also argue that question number three would hurt the independent candidate process because it would change the way independent and minor party candidates who traditionally appear on the general election, they would be appearing then on the primary election and grouped with the partisan offices as well, or the partisan affiliated candidates. And then finally, some argue that question number three is really not suitable for its appearance to be changed in the Nevada Constitution, that would be a too permanent of a change in a document such as the Constitution. Another argument, I guess, against, but some people say that it could be expensive to implement. And then on the flip side, maybe it does undermine the one person, one vote principle. And then finally, that ranked choice voting tabulation, some have argued in opposition that it might result in some votes not being counted, while others might have their vote counted many times. That's what the opponents have said as well. So, and we have included those in the report just very factually based on what we've seen.
And again, I'll restate, I'll be bringing in people from the Yes for Three and the No for Three campaigns later on to do a deeper dive on kind of their arguments for and against, but appreciate you taking me through those. In the places where this has been implemented, and the way it's implemented is different. Some people have final four. Some people have final five. All these primaries and open primaries look a little bit different. But generally and broadly, have they been successful at boosting voter turnout and kind of achieving these goals of bringing in these nonpartisan voters and making this kind of a more inclusive process for all voters?
What I will say, though, when it comes to open primaries, and this is just maybe my observation more than anything, we know, I think we could assume that if the primary election system were open to nonpartisan voters, I think we would probably, it's safe to assume, see a lot more of that component of the electorate turn out to vote. Those non-primary election or nonpartisan ballots are traditionally quite small,
right?
You know, school boards, general improvement districts, that sort of thing. So opening up to a wider slate of candidates for nonpartisan voters could bring more turnout in that group.
And that brings to mind another question that I had, which is, which races does this actually affect? It does not affect the presidential race, because that's an entirely separate contest altogether with different rules. It's statewide races, assembly and Senate races in the state, but not the local, say, city councils and county commissions and things?
Right. I think the best thing to do is actually just specifically write from the ballot question itself, and that really does explain it, which says, shall the Nevada Constitution be amended to allow all Nevada voters the right to participate in open primary elections to choose candidates for the general election in which all voters may then rank them in order of preference for the office of U.S. Senators, U.S. Representatives, the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, State Treasurer, State Controller, Attorney General, and State Legislators. That is how the question is framed. You know, whether the legislature decides in 2025, if this is approved, to do some other, you know, tweaking with our election laws to expand or whatever this further, that remains to be seen. But I think it's important that the voters understand that that is specific to what the ballot question says.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. A couple random things and assorted questions that I've had before we kind of wrap up today. Number one, did you guys look at or have other jurisdictions said what this has cost to implement? Obviously, it's a pretty significant change. And that's one of the arguments against, do we know how much money would need to be spent to switch this over?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Our report doesn't really cover the fiscal pieces to this. But I would point out, Nevada embarked in purchasing new voting machines starting in the 2020 election cycle. The new voting systems now are designed to accommodate ranked choice voting and, you know, different types of primary scenarios, as well as the tabulation systems do too. So I cannot comment exactly on the fiscal impacts of this, but I would say that from a processing standpoint, I guess theoretically, it might not cost that much. But there are things to think about when it comes to the size of the ballot and maybe other, you know, factors in terms of, you know, timing and either educating voters on this issue would be a cost and that sort of thing.
Right.
But that is something that, you know, we didn't contemplate in our report, but I think something that, you know, certainly our election administrators should be thinking about.
Yeah. And then a unique scenario that could happen with this that Christine flagged for me is, what happens if there's a tie? I mean,
that's a great question.
In our caucuses, I've seen where it's a roll of the dice or you're picking a card or something.
Right.
That's obviously not a state-run process in the caucus. Do we have a Nevada-specific thing where we're rolling a dice, taking a card, or what happens if we tie?
So Nevada law does address tie votes, and a tie between two final counting candidates with this ranked choice voting will be decided as set forth by Nevada law. And a tie between two candidates with those fewest votes when it comes to ranked choice voting is decided by lot.
And potentially there would be more opportunities for the ties, right? Because if you're breaking ties, as you said, between the fourth or fifth choice candidates, so this might actually come up more under the system.
It's conceivable. Absolutely. So, I mean, ties still are exceedingly rare.
Yeah.
But in our smaller jurisdictions, we have seen this happen in our rural counties where there are fewer voters. You know, sometimes that's very important. Your one vote absolutely counts.
Yeah.
And so we have seen those instances where there have been tie votes.
And to be sure, lots is literally a roll of the dice.
I'd have to look at the law, but last time I looked, I think they used actually a deck of cards and choose the highest the highest cards. That's I think that's how it's laid out in Nevada law.
I can't think of a time in my time at News 4 that I've seen this happen, aside from, again, in the caucus, which is a different process altogether. But and one thing I forgot to mention, too, if this passes in 2024, again, it already passed in 2022 with about 53% of the vote. Mm-hmm. If it passes again, it goes into the Nevada Constitution, and our first election with these reforms would be in 2026?
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. And it is important to note, as I said before, if ballot question three passes, the 2025 legislature will need to look at, I'll call it trailer legislation, to really go into Chapter 293 of the NRS, which dictates our election law, and make those adjustments in conformance with the changes in ballot question three.
Absolutely. A lot of things that the lawmakers will have consider. Yes. But before that, a lot of things are voters all across the state will have to consider. I really appreciate you guys coming by the studio today to explain ballot question three, because there's so much to get into. And as I've mentioned before, we'll have more episodes on this topic later as we get into election season. But hopefully this is a great primer for voters out there who just want to know, what is this ballot question? What would it do without any spin or bias? And that's why we are so appreciative to the Gwynn Center for bringing us that nonpartisan information that we so desperately need in today's media environment. So thank you guys for coming on.
No, thank you. We appreciate
Thank you so much. It's been great.
If you made it to the end of this episode, I really appreciate it. If you have guest ideas, episode ideas, questions, comments, compliments, concerns, anything at all, feel free to shoot us an email to bjmargiott, M-A-R-G-I-O-T-T, at sbgtv.com and put Ballot Battleground Nevada in the subject line. And if you have a minute, I'd really appreciate it if you left a rating and especially a review. That helps the podcast show up higher in searches so more people can discover our show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.